Hey there, creatives. My name is Cecilia, and whether you're a regular or a newcomer, I'd like to welcome you to our weekly podcast, where we get to hear stories and insights from leaders in the Catholic creative world every week. I feel filled after listening to this interview. Mike is a refreshing soul. He's humble, kind, down to earth, and he understands suffering on a deep level. And not only does he understand suffering, he understands how to use it as fuel for the fire that is his artistic heart. His story has inspired me to want to transform the way I suffer, the way I react to rejection and discouragement in my life. The next time I find myself entering into that place, I need to remember that I have a choice to just lean in and fall on my knees and pray, that I have an opportunity to be vulnerable and to let myself be seen and heard by Christ and by those in community with me. In a very concrete way, I experienced this at the Friday night liturgy at the Summit, and it was beautiful. It was messy and painful, but it was beautiful. I felt free, like a part of me had been released. I hope this conversation speaks to you as much as it spoke to me. Let's check it out.
Dude, thanks for coming on the cast.
Yeah.
It's awesome to have you.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, so this is a bit of a break for you in between lots of Europe travels, going on the road to Brazil with Christopher West, and obviously all the work that you're doing with the Kin, Mike Mangione and the Kin, and then also keeping up your podcast. Dude, you're quite the Renaissance man
and father of three. That's kind of my biggest thing is being a husband and a daddy. I mean that not to sound like the cool guy, like, of course, hey, family first, but seriously, I wish it wasn't all I did, but it is, it's all I do. No, it's been busy, but it's been good. The podcast I could do a better job at, it's been quite a while, but it's been good, man. It's a good busy to be in, but it's funny how even when you don't have anything going on, you feel doubt.
Yeah.
And you're like, why not me? And you see everybody else, you're like, why them? Why not me?
Yeah.
And then when you have everything going on, you're like, you have doubt. And you're like, why am I not as good? Why? And like, they're all really good and I'm not that good. So there's always doubt. So I don't know, man. I'm constantly finding myself to just kind of hand it all over and just be thankful for opportunity and not be too weighting myself down unnecessarily. So
dude, I totally get that, man. It's real. That's right. Like the constant cross of artistic work, right, is like self-comparison and just like the sense of I definitely have been working on that in myself.
I think I've gotten to an age though where, like, it used to be I'd get in conversations and I was always kind of like, my first thing was to appear like I have it all together, and then the second thing was to flaunt what I'm doing, maybe then throw out a couple names, you know. But now, as I gotten older, it's pretty much like the tone in my conversation is, "Hi, yeah, I'm Mike. I suck. I really like what you're doing." So it's like just a complete flip. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because I suck. I don't know. I'm going in a hole. Well, no, it's funny how that things change, though. I think I've just become more grounded, I think.
Yeah, that is a crazy thing with age. I mean, that's like one of the things that I've really appreciated about getting to know you, you know, through the group and just also through the Great Commission Summit, was just that sense of, like, not only are you really raw, you've been able to be like super raw in your plan, but there's also a sense of just, you've been around the block a little bit, and the groundedness to you was super helpful and healthy for the rest of us who are kind of making our way up the ranks as well, just to be able to have somebody that is like, slow down, Sonny, you know?
Yeah. If anybody needs to lean in and talk about how much they hurt and how painful they are and beaten up, I'm definitely your guy.
Yeah, that's great.
I physically feel how I feel on the inside, emotionally too. So yeah, there's been a lot of wear and tear over the past couple of years, for sure. And I think I look like it.
I mean, I don't think you look like it. The soul patch definitely makes you seem like maybe you're a youth minister and you're like 20, 22.
This is a joke. I brought it back for my wife. I had a beard and then I did a mustache and she literally couldn't look at me. And I said, come on. My oldest daughter wanted me to have a mustache. I was like, come on, let's do it for Avila. And she's like, and every time I walk in a room and she like start off saying something and then look up at me. And then she'd stop. It'd be like the most important thing. It'd be like plans for the day, something about family. And then she'd see me and stop and be like, I can't. You have to shave that off. And so I said, all right, well, I'm going to bring back the 1998 soul patch.
Just the spider.
See what's up with that.
So Mike, what are you and your soul patch up to these days? You said you're busy, you're doing traveling, you're touring. Like when people are just meeting you and getting to know you, like what do you tell them that you do and that you're doing?
Well, I just say musician. I'm a musician. And then everybody's like, wow. Then they want to know,
how you make money.
Yeah. They're like, do I know you? Where can I see you? And then, how do you make a living doing it? Or like, what do you do? Like, they're always kind of confused because in a lot of people's minds, if you're a musician, and you're actually making a living, they should know who you are.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree.
they should know who you are.
They should know who I am. But so then when I get in the nitty gritty, I get into things. I say, well, I co-founded an organization. I have a band called The Kin. I play a lot of stuff solo. I as far as like how to make a living, I co-founded an organization with a speaker and an author, and we developed events that combine my music with his teaching, and we bring that around the world. And then like when they like want to know more, I say, you know, so we'll go into a place and we'll do an event, and that's the anchor, and then I'll play a couple dates into it, and I'll play a couple dates out of it. So I combine the music. I combine my own shows with the ministry that he and I are doing. And so it's just a really, and they're like, and they'll say like, where do you play? And I'll play anything from festivals to house concerts. And it's like, house concerts, what's that? I'm like, well, so that's kind of how it goes. Like people are, I say musician. And then if somebody really cares, we kind of get into it. But, you know, talking about, I've never been. So Christopher West that I work with, obviously, if you know him, he's a teacher on theology of the body. I've never been the guy that's good at explaining it. So when people ask me, I'm always kind of like, I know what to say now, but you know, I'm not the guy that's like, you know, out there to like, I'm not going to give a talk on it. I can't, I can give his talk on it. I can like recite it, but I can't give my own. And you know, so I keep it simple.
Right.
Playing music. Yeah.
Cool. So one of the things that I love about like the way that you and Chris work together is that in, I feel like contrast to many other, like experiences where there's like teaching, it is incredibly creative. You guys totally get how important it is to like, not just teach, but to push that teaching down into the heart by using art. And I think it's kind of funny that like, most people know Chris's name, but most people don't know your name. I think it's a bit of a testament to the fact that like the artist in a lot of ways like is not the one that people think is really vital to the whole kind of shebang. But within your relationship with Chris, it really feels like you both really honor and respect each other, like how essential each other's role is in bringing out the teaching in a way that's really effective. So I just wanted to hear about that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And, you know, first, just you kind of hit on a couple things there. The first thing is that there's so many textures in this world that we can work with. It doesn't make sense just to use one. And, you know, with music, it's like you can have the best song on paper, but if you have a bad instrument, a bad voice, a band that doesn't get it, poor recording, a bad room that you're recording in, doesn't matter. It's the best song. It's not going to sound good. Example, another example would be like, I used to play at this like sandwich shop a long time ago. I'd play for 20 bucks and a sandwich. And I would kind of do a test. I'd be playing there and I would play, in my opinion, but kind of objectively, like some of the best songs that I think were ever written of my own. No, of other people's. And I would play them and nobody cared. And it's because the frame of what of the picture is so important. If you have the best picture and the worst frame, it's not going to embellish and elevate and transcend where the artist intended that thing to go. It's going to drag down and weight it down. And so you have to pay attention to all of those elements. It's like the dude on stage in shorts and sneakers. You know, it's like, dude, throw on some slacks, because visually, you're audibly, I get it, it's amazing. Your chops, get it, beautiful. Visually, your white sneakers and shorts are not working for me. It's taking me out of the experience. So that's something that we've always felt strongly about. And a lot, you know, it's just experiential. It's the idea of, you know, I'm a little bit older than you. Christopher is 10 years older than me. And, you know, we came from a time where when you wanted music, you'd buy a record. For me, you'd buy a cassette or a CD, and you would hold the artifact in your hand. So, and there would be 10, 12, 15 songs, and you'd open it up and you'd read things about the band and you'd read the lyrics, because it wasn't just about hearing the sounds. It was about holding a part of them and internalizing and taking in a part of who they are, because they're connecting with you on one level. You want to connect with them more. You want full communion. And, you know, that's where we came from. And so when we started working together, well, when we started becoming friends, the idea, first off, Christopher was in a touring band himself. So he's a huge fan of music. He's, you know, he was a drummer in college, and he actually stopped college for a while so he can tour in a band for a couple of years. So he was like, he was in the music thing for a while, so he gets it. But when we saw the idea, you know, the potential of working together, it's like, okay, now we can like say, teach something and then let it simmer and marinate in some another form of beauty that can speak to the heart. So if you can speak to the head and the heart at the same time and just let them kind of fight each other, you can have a really potential event. So that's where that came from. But yeah, I mean, it is funny, like as far as like the, I've been working with him for 10 years and, you know, it helps. Like people definitely know what I'm doing, but you know, at those events, people are really there to learn the teaching. It's changed a little bit now that it's been so long. There are people that understand what the core thing is, like what we're up to. And so they get the beauty element. They know what I do. They know the music, but it's not like, a one-to-one ratio. Everybody that knows Christopher knows me, you know, it's not even close. So, you know, and that's fine with me because there's a bigger mission involved. But, you know, there was a period of time where after a while, you know, you'd be thrown in these situations where you're bringing an event somewhere and the music component, like they're like taking my picture and name off of a promotion and stuff like that. And it's like, look, it's not even an ego thing for me. It just makes sense when somebody sits down and they come to this talk and I start playing. Why am I there? So if you put that up front, it makes sense. Like, there's a musical component to this at all, you know. And people just, you know, there's a period where people were just kind of like manipulating that stuff and taking it out or not, you know, I'm kind of second thought. And I would just really, you know, self, like we talked about already, self-doubt is huge. And so there's just that part of me that'd be like, oh man, do I even need to be here? Like what, why am I here? You know, they're here for this teaching and I'm just kind of like, what am I, like the opportunity to go to the bathroom or, you know, like, but the biggest advocate was Christopher. And it's just a testament to his character. He always would look me in the eyes and just say, "Your brother, you're anointed. Like what you're doing is X, Y, Z. And you have to, do you understand that? Like, do you see," like he will come up to me after I play a song today. He'll come up to me and say, "Brother, I gotta tell you, man, you know, at your gate, there's something you're doing with your guitar today. There's this one moment," and he'll like call out a moment, like, "There's one moment, it's right after this verse where you did this pull on a string and it just pierced my heart, man. It was really speaking to me and opened up so much in where I'm at, what I'm praying." He's like telling me this at a break at an event. So the brother, he's real. And so he's doing that constantly for me. And so that really kind of, at that middle period where I was like, what am I doing, really helped me get through it. Now, I understand it in the best humble and honest way what I'm doing with Christopher.
And I think what you're saying though about like people sort of Catholics coming for the teaching, they're not really like thinking, oh man, I really want this multifaceted event. Like there's something that you guys are believing about the way that I guess the human person works just in general, there's something different about that than like what is generally understood or believed by most Catholics, not necessarily the church, but just like people.
Art is a resource to be used and teach and to pray with and to feel and to inspire. Like art is a resource to be used. It's not entertainment. It can be, but it's not just entertainment. Like art can really be ingested and change things and open things up and be a conduit of the Holy Spirit in a way that words can sometimes dictate where the person wants the Holy Spirit to go, but art can move the heart in a way that the Spirit can swirl on its own and really have freedom. And a lot of Catholics don't understand that. That's why a lot of Catholics don't want the kind of art that I do. A lot of Catholics want something simple. Praise is great, but a lot of Catholics want to keep it simple. Give me praise. Give me somewhere. I want my hands in the air. Hey, when you play the show, can you do a couple songs where their hands are in the air? Mm-hmm. Like people have said that to me before. It's like, no, I can't. I mean, unless I tell them to put their hands in the air, I can do that if you want. But like, people have to understand that art is a resource that if we allow ourselves to really sit down and receive it, and not try to get anything particular out of it, intentional out of it, but just sit down and let it speak to you. Open yourself up, be vulnerable with it. Then you'll be moved, and the Holy Spirit will speak to you. And for that reason alone, not all art has to be Catholic art to have that power. And that's because God's bigger than Catholic art.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that's also interesting about your gig is that you don't go with him and play worship songs after he's done, which is, I mean, that's normal. Plenty of people do that. Like, you go up and you just play stuff that you've written about your life. Personal testimony kind of. I mean, that's the Americana, like, folksy sort of bluesy thing that you do. Lends itself so deeply to being like personal testimony and having narrative to it. So it's totally different than what I guess you expect when you go to a Catholic event.
But that idea of the song being something that we can gather around and tell a story, like just imagine like, you know, 200 years ago when people were coming to the Appalachians and they didn't have much to bring with them, but they had their stories and songs. And they'd sit around the campfire, and it wasn't for entertainment. It was for remembrance of who they are and where they came from and preserving culture. That's what Rodzinka was when, you know, having those little plays down in the basements during Nazi occupation with John Paul II. Like, the whole point was, you know, you can destroy our buildings, you can take our country, but you can't take our memory, and you can't take this culture away from us. And that's what art is. And so, that focusing on identity and community has the potential of becoming transcendent, because identity, memory, community creates something else otherworldly that we experience and we know so well. It's the feeling of home, the feeling of comfort, right? Of being a place of rest, and that's God. And so, you know, for me, I just feel like maybe in the past couple of years, praise and worship. And again, I have nothing, I'm not bashing or anything. I think it's great. And there's people that do it really well, and it's amazing. I can't do it. But it's, for me, it's like not so foreign to like, hey, why don't we do something that our ancestors used to do a long time ago and just kind of get, I call it the holy campfire. Like, why don't we just gather around and share stories and kind of have this little remembrance moment, do something a little more communal. We're having communion up here at the altar. Why don't we have a communion of bodies and minds here in the pew or in the basement or, you know, wherever we're at? That's the kind of my thinking about it. So it's always made sense to me, but it does not make, not a lot of people get that at all. I can tell you for sure.
No, I do, dude. I know. It's the curse of sort of being ahead of your time.
Is that what that is?
It's not belonging. Yeah.
Someday they'll come to my grave and said, man.
Now we get it.
Can you imagine how hard it was for him? Nobody understood. He thought he sucked. He questioned himself all the time, but really nobody got it.
Yeah. Well, dude, I mean, when was the first time you started to like go after that experience of sort of communion and home? Was that when you were a kid, you just started playing guitar and with the family in the living room?
Yeah, it was the first encounter with it was listening to music. Specifically, I have I don't know if I'm like, I have this date on lockdown because I just needed to have it subconsciously, so I just declared it in my head. But there was a period, I think it was like my sophomore year of high school, where I got Peter Gabriel So and Peter Gabriel Us, two records that were old when I got them. They're from the 80s. And I got them during Christmas break, and I spent all Christmas break just laying in my bed. My bedroom was all decorated. It was all like Christmas lights and felt posters, and I had carpeting. I totally decked it out. It's all sacramental, right? And I didn't know it, but it was all these like little sacramentals, like everything like spoke of something else greater. And I'd put these, and I'd light incense, and I put these albums on. I just lay in my bed, and it just opened up this world. And Peter Gabriel was, you know, through these songs and through these lyrics and through these sounds and these landscapes, he was opening up something in me that I couldn't touch and I couldn't communicate, but I felt deeply. And so that was like the first time that I was like, whoa, like this is, he's teaching me about myself in a way that I didn't know. Well, he's teaching me about myself, so obviously I didn't know. And I can't describe what he's teaching me, so I have to play. Because it's only when I'm playing that I'm coming close to participating in the conversation that he started with me. And the conversation that started with him came from somebody else, and for that person, somebody else. And you can lead that all the way back to the Creator. And so that was the time for me when I was like, okay, music has the potential not just to be, you know, poppy and ear candy. Music has the potential to say something to somebody in a communal way that brings both of you up to a different plane, to become an icon. And that I realized that probably in I'd say college and a little bit after college, when I really started forming the understanding that I have today, is that music's either an idol or an icon. And like American Idol is a very fitting name for a show like that, because it's all about the materials, not what they create, but how fine they are. Like if you just focus on, look how fine this gold, look how fine this chisel, like look how fine the materials are, you're stopping short, man. If you actually see what's been created through those great materials, but see what's been created, and it actually transcends you beyond it into contemplating who you are as a human being and what you are in this human mystery, then that artifact just became an icon. And that's the potential of real art, I think.
Yeah. It's really funny that like your the person that sort of communicated that to you was Peter Gabriel, and for me, my first experiences of that sense of, I guess, glory in music was Blink-182, which is,
for real,
definitely not like quite as profound, but yeah, those were the places where I had my first experiences of being elevated. Like I'm not sure exactly what I was being elevated to, but it was definitely, that was the band that I was laying in my bed, sort of like listening to over and over again, trying to like figure out what was going on. I was just intoxicated by it, but it was not quite as wholesome.
but like even in those moments of darkness, it is still part of the Creator's full spectrum. You know, if you need the light, you need the dark. And I'm not saying Blink-182 represents darkness. I don't think that at all. But, you know, it comes in the funniest places. And if the intention of the artist is to speak something honest from an experience that they've had, to open it up and to have a dialogue about it, then that can be a holy thing, you know. And the fact that it spoke to you and you are who you are today is a testament to that.
Yeah, it's really funny, like how much of an impact those first, like bands/experiences of I don't know what you call it, reverie or something, but that music can do to a person to open them up. That was so impactful to me as a human being. I feel like my whole life kind of was altered by encountering, it's embarrassing to admit, but that band.
Yeah, so that's awesome, man. Yeah, I you know, if you want to go back and forth about embarrassing bands, I can definitely share my catalog.
Nice, man. So, but in terms of like deciding to play, were you already a musician by that point, or was that like something that came after you had discovered music in this way?
So that, like, that, you know, that understanding, did that come after?
Yeah. Did that come after you? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I started drums at 7. I started stealing my brother's guitar at 13 because I wanted to be Eddie Vedder and I wanted to be Bob Dylan and I wanted to, I loved Bob Marley, but I knew I couldn't write Bob Marley songs. But there's another artist that speaks about the ache and speaks about something bigger than himself right there. I can tell you this. I was moved. They started this conversation with me that I wanted to participate in. And I knew the potential of that music to have an impact on me. And I wanted to create music that had an impact on other people. That's why I started playing. There was a part of me that just thought they were cool. And I wanted to be cool. But that was very thin, and below that was this real deep thing. So that was 13, I started playing guitar. And then, dude, all through from like 7th grade until senior year of high school, I was like all about football. And
you were the football kid?
I was a football kid. But I was one of those neat hybrids where I was football and music. So I was like the captain of the football team and also in choir and an a cappella group.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I think there's like a high school musical written about you.
I could have played some great character in a high school musical. But like, and I remember at one point, it might have been homecoming where the choir director said, "Hey, Mike, would you mind during halftime?" our group is called Nine, the a cappella group. It's like, do you mind coming out and actually singing with the a cappella group during your halftime? And I said, "Mr. S, absolutely not." Not. I can't leave my team. I'm sorry, guys. I have to go sing this number without my tenor part. I'm the melody. No, so, but that was totally like, so I was all in on music. I was all in on football, but I'm 5'5". And so I knew by, you know, junior year, I was like, all right, I'm not going to move on with football. So I just went, I continued with music. And then I went to Marquette in Milwaukee, mainly because I only chose 4 schools to look at, but why Marquette out of the 4 is because it was in the city. So I wanted to go into a city and have access to city stuff for music. And then it was really then that I got into my faith, my junior year, and I started incorporating faith into the morality into it, and I started looking at the narrative of characters through the lens of who I am now, like a and faith and art are so, they're so easily adaptable. Like, you know, when people say, you know, Christian art, I'm always like, oh, most art really kind of is Christian if it's done with an honest intent of searching. But anyway, so that whole like really honing in on that understanding of what everything I just said was around that time. It was around like the junior, senior, and then first couple of years after college.
So was that when you started to like make money with it? When you started to go pro?
To go pro.
Getting sandwiches and $20?
Yeah, man. They're big sandwiches. Just so you know. Really big sandwiches. And fountain drinks, so I can get a lot of soda in my belly. So the first paid gig I had was at the university. And it was so funny because Marquette University has this coffee house called The Brew Bayou. And I got asked, I think I did a talent show, and I got asked to play a show at The Brew Bayou. Now, here's the thing. Universities have campus activity funds, right? And so they you know, universities hire outside entertainment or whatever, and they pay them for these funds, and they get these funds on an annual basis. And if they don't use them up by the end of the year, they don't get the same amount that the university allocates, a lower amount. So they have to spend this money. They're not, they don't hold that close to them. And so, I didn't know that. I knew that after, but I didn't know that at the time. And so my first check as a college student for playing the Brew by a coffee house that I went to anyway, and I would have played for free, was for $800. And this was like 2001, let's say. Blew my mind. And like, dude, at that moment, I was like, do I have to finish college? I mean, can I just play the Brew by Use it across the nation and just make $800? And then like fast forward to like 3 years later when I'm living in a van and I'm playing in like Charleston, Illinois at a little bar, and I make $50 and all the beer I can drink, and I sleep in my van afterwards and get gas money, you know. Like, it doesn't. I was duped.
Didn't happen.
Used up all my 800.
Yeah. So, I mean, usually when people, you know, hit that experience of like, wow, it's not quite as sexy as it looked, they quit. What made you keep on going with it?
I honestly had no other thing to do. I studied environmental science, but you know, I don't know. I don't know. After college, I got a job offer with General Electric. But I don't know, man, I didn't really want to do it. So I moved back to Chicago, and then, decided to move to Los Angeles, and I moved out there, and I was in LA for a while. I worked at Starbucks, and then I did like all these little odd jobs, like random things like movie extra work, or I was like a secret shopper, where I would be hired by companies to go and act like I'm buying something, but I'm actually just taking notes,
checking out the store
and taking notes on how their customer service and stuff like that, and then I give a report, random stuff. And then I got to a point where I was just like, I don't want to, like, you know, I'm working at Starbucks, I'm horrible, I'm the worst at start. Like, I was the worst. I was absolutely, like, people would come in, and the moment they said their order, it was almost like somebody touched the sweat button on my face. I would just start dripping sweat, and I get so nervous that I was going to mess up their order that I actually would always mess up the order.
Yeah.
So I was like, dude, I can't wait for this anymore. I just got to get on the road. And I bought a van, and I got rid of my apartment. I just lived in the van and toured around and played all over the place. And it really was one of those where it's like, I don't know what else there is. I can't teach music. I play upside down, so I can't teach you how to play guitar. Singing, I never knew theory. You're right. I'm all ear. Can't teach singing. Environmental science, I probably need a master's. That General Electric thing, I had to like climb smokestacks. I don't want to do that. I probably need a master's. So it's just like, I'm just going to go for this. I can play songs. I know I can play songs. So I just did that. And I was dumb enough to stick with it at that early age, that then I got to a point where I was older. And I was like, now I really need to make this work, because I waited way too long. Well, and that's the thing, dude. And I dated my wife for 6 years, and people would be like, are you going to propose? Are you going to propose? And I'd be like, I can't afford it. I mean, as a practicing Catholic, when I get married, that means I'm saying yes to a lot of things, you know, and I'm being realistic. I can't do it. So we waited for a long time, and we got married, and then we started having kids. And so, you know, I've just, just had to pull it together. But your question was, why did I stick with it? I just didn't really pay attention that I was getting too deep.
So. You were the frog in the boiling water.
Totally, I'm just sitting.
And now you're an artist.
Something. That's a question I ask every day. Am I an artist? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, dude, I mean, what was one of the moments where you experienced that dream coming true, where you got to see your music actually affecting people in a way that was like otherworldly?
Oh, well, you know, that question, there's a lot of things that pop in my head. like different moments. I remember, I'm going to say a couple of them just because it's fun for me. I remember huddling with my band at, Spain, Madrid, World Youth Day. And we were backstage in a theater that was they had to cut it off and 3,000 people had to walk away. Like it was so packed. I'd like to say it's because I was there, but it's because Christopher and I were there. But I remember the sound of the audience, and they, you know, it's classic like international form where everybody starts doing their chants and cheers and stuff. It was about, I think the room held like 4,000 people and we were backstage. And one thing about World Youth Day that only a few of us know is that the planning committee don't really know what they're doing.
Does only a few people know
Does
that?
Does everybody know that? Like okay.
I feel like that's common knowledge.
Okay. Sorry. I assumed not everybody knew that. So
if you have planning and committee in the same phrase and that's in charge of an event and it's associated with the Vatican, like you kind of just, yeah, it's probably not going to be amazing.
Throw in like another country where you have like a 5 p.m. or a 3 p.m. sound check, but the whole crew goes on lunch for 2 hours and you're like, anyway, so the lion's share of organizing what we were doing in Madrid fell on my back. And so it was so much pressure. I felt like maybe how you feel right now. And anyway, so long story short, we were back there and we heard the crowd and I started weeping because it was almost like how much do we fight and how much do we work just to be heard? And not like heard in like the ego, you know, in ego's way, but like just to be heard as a human. Please give me yourself so I may be vulnerable with you, please. And I knew I was going to go on a stage where that could happen. And so that was awesome. But the most profound moment for me where I felt like I was changing the world was when I was playing a show it was like a little room. It was like not a house, but I think it was like a little venue, like a little, you know, performing arts center type thing. And it was dark and I couldn't really see because the lights were on me, but I could see the first couple of rows. And as I'm playing, I'm scanning across. And you know, when you're on the road, you're tired. It's a weird schedule. You get there, you bring all of the road with you when you get to that moment of performance. And the trick is, how do I not bring it on stage? How do I leave it at the foot of it? And how do I enter into something special with these people? And I remember battling it. Like, oh, I can't do it. I need to focus. I need to get in. And then as I scan, I'm starting to scan from right to left. And that guy doesn't look like he's really into it. That girl probably doesn't care. That guy probably doesn't care. That guy's looking at his phone. His face is illuminated, which you always, for the record, folks, when you're in an audience and you look at your phone, you see it. Everybody sees it. I mean, when you're on the stage, it's like a big light pops on your face. Anyway, so I'm just doing that, and it's just despair, despair, despair. And then finally, my eyes lock in on one woman who's sitting there doing nothing but closing her eyes, and she had a look on her face, so I knew she wasn't sleeping. Her eyes were closed, and she was doing nothing but just taking in what I was trying to say and what I was trying to communicate. And in the most pure way, in that moment, I felt incredible intimacy. Christopher always says, into me see, right? In that sense, intimacy and responsibility to her to safeguard that. And all of a sudden, I had full awareness of what I was doing. I am honored to have you right now in this moment. I want to share something with you. And I felt I was able then to go completely vulnerable because I knew that she would take care of it. She would take care of that vulnerability. And so that, to me, she then became my whole world. And that was like wow. Like it changed everything for me. So now I'm always in those moments, just trying to find that person. And if I can't find that person, have faith that that person's there, and that, that I need to, I have a responsibility to honor that person with honesty and integrity of the music. So that's it.
That's one of the things that I love about you, man. Like, I feel like a lot of people that I meet, that are musicians, not just in terms of like not worship musicians, but just whatever. When I was a musician, we'll say that, when I was a musician and was doing the emo rock band thing, like it was very invulnerable because I was projecting something that wasn't myself. Like I was projecting an image of like sort of a heroic kind of super cool rock band, punk rocker or whatever. And all these people were sort of communing with this idea, but it wasn't, I was never playing in one of these shows in that kind of way where it was like totally vulnerable, like an exchange of who I really was with the people that were in front of me. It takes a really radical level of courage to do that as a musician.
It takes a strong desire to want to do it. I mean, I mean, I love the show. I'm trying to think of like people who put on great shows, but they're still like being like, I was gonna say like Iggy Pop, but Iggy Pop is very vulnerable on stage. You know, like he literally is taking it off and saying, look at me, you know, I don't know. I don't want it any other way. It's not something I'm trying to do for like a mission. It's something I'm trying to do for release. It's like, I have to do it. I don't know why. So, but thank you for mentioning it.
Yeah. Well, dude, I mean, when you, it takes courage to do that. And the reason why I want to point that out is because it's not an obvious threshold to be able to cross. Like, I think for a lot of people, there is, maybe you do this intuitively, but you figured out ways to hold on to hope or to hold on to intimacy, even when discouragement is happening, when you're like, the people around you are rejecting you, you know, you somehow, and this is part of your groundedness, you've figured out how to continue to maintain that sense of vulnerability. And I'm just wondering where you and how you learned it, what like lessons you have to be able to offer other people. The reason why I want to know that is because it's something I'm struggling with right now, like personally a lot. And then also just in terms of the, I don't know, all the scandals and stuff that are happening, it's like you have to find hope to be able to like stay vulnerable, and I'm struggling with it.
Yeah. But even in that example, the scandals, isn't like, I don't know, I'm going to say this, not, I don't know if this is how it is for you, but is it for you, for me, the thought of everything happening, the thought of the history of it, of not just what's happening, not just what happened, what's currently happening. And then I start thinking of relationships that I've, you know, like the bad encounters that I've had with certain people in the church, and the way that I've been told that I'm supposed to treat certain people of certain positions in the church. And then to find out that a small group have just hit it in the face and just abused it, makes me so upset and so pissed that when I think of it, I just want to I just want to get on my knees and weep. And I just want to want to be on my knees. And there's something in my stomach that it only appears when I think of certain people dying, or when I think of, you know, like events that just are so tragic. every once in a while, it's a little ember that goes whoop and just glows in me and it hurts and I just cradle it. And the thought of what happened, you know, with this current situation is the same thing. And it's in those moments that I want to pray and I want to not reach out and say F you and get angry, but I want to like close the doors and like curl up and just hunker in and pray. And performance, so what I'm saying is it turns me into the source, not to deny the source and run away from it. And in performance, in those moments when I do feel that there's a sense of being denied, yes, there's a part of me that initially is like, ugh, you know what, I'm just going to phone it in. I'm going to phone it in and I'm going to sing the notes and I'm going to get a paycheck and I'm going to leave, or maybe not. I don't know. But in the same sense of what I'm talking about, there's also part of me that thinks about all the effort, all the time that I've spent sleeping in a van, that I've spent away from my family, that I've spent on an airplane with my head kinked. I'm not gonna make you feel bad for me for flying an airplane. Let's go back to the van. But like, you know what I'm saying, like all the time, like every show is an hour 15 hour and a half, and every trip to get there is at least 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours. Like it's such an expense on family, money and time. All of that sacrifice, the sad times with my band, the times that my band was crying, the times that my band was having joy, all of that shit to get me to this point. And I can't even get you to give me like a couple seconds to share with you something I'm working on. It makes me not get angry. It makes me turn in and pray. And it's that place that I'm most vulnerable, because I want to just weep there. And I then play from there. And that's the vulnerability. So it's not always like, sometimes the vulnerability is because I need it. I want to be there for myself because it's unavoidable. It's unavoidable. And this might just be like the 15 years of doing it, speaking, but there are times where I feel the miles that I've traveled, and I can't bullshit you on stage because of it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, I think what you're saying is it really is a key. Like the reason why I sort of like, whew, you know, it's convicting, because for me, that temptation to sort of say I'm being rejected, like fuck it, I'm like packing up and leaving, like taking my ball and going home, is like a constant thing right now with like putting on the summit. You know, it's like, dude, you know, every day of just like answering Facebook messages about like show off Tuesday, I'm feeling the piling up of all of that stuff. And then one person being like, oh yeah, I can't come anymore, I'm sorry man, I've got this other thing. And like I got a couple of those in a week, and it triggers this, you know, I want to just like torch it, because I feel like my investment, my like gift is it, like me as who I am is being rejected. And I had this conversation with Marcellino a couple days ago about like burnout and kind of feeling that way. And we just both realized like the reason why we're feeling this way is because we're not like creating out of it. We're just like doing admin work right now. And we need to be letting this turn us into like creatives again. And in that regard, like I need to be writing poetry about what I'm feeling right now and whatever. But like sometimes it's really hard to like, instead of being angry and like giving the fuck you to like, you know, the world, actually staying vulnerable, feeling the pain of that, and then continuing to make even more out of it. Like it's very, I don't know, Christian. It's very much like a Christ thing, you know?
That's important. You know, though, and I'm not saying this, there's something you said in the beginning, acknowledging that it's been all the effort put in and the depletion. It's a it's a healthy thing to really take inventory on that, and to say, is it worth it? I'm not saying specifically your event. You need to do that with the summit. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying with anything we do, we have to do that. And I know, like, I made a huge transition in my life when I came from the generation that you played because even if it didn't pay, it was promotion, right? And you can gain fans and blah, blah, blah. I did that. And I got to a point where it became counterproductive. So we put in all the work so that we can actually have those moments of playing with the toy, right? Of being creative, like you said. But sometimes being too active can suck out, art and commerce. When the commerce starts to take over, that the art gets snuffed out, it can kill you. And so there's a part where I was just playing. I was taking everything and doing it, and I was like, you know what? I gotta say no, so that what I say yes to is this quality. And that changed everything for me. So the effort that we put into things need to be of a certain standard and quality that we can keep our ember going. But at the same time, you also said something great. So I guess if anybody's listening and they for some reason I feel like I should have advice, it is to choose what you say yes to so that you don't so that it's life-giving and creatively cultivating for you. You don't have to say yes to everything, and you don't have to do things just for exposure and all that stuff. You have to do things because they help you in a way that's artistic, financially, or whatever. But also what you're saying, though, I think is really true and awesome, is that, I spend maybe 5% of my time playing music. I spend the rest creating opportunities to do so. And then occasionally I'll get to write a song. So, that's just part of it. We have to build the sandbox if we want to play in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you like,
yeah. I don't know. No, I get that for sure. But yeah, I guess in the light of the scandals and all of the other sort of things that I'm experiencing in my life, the point that you're making that resonates deeply with me is that using the suffering to as more fodder for intimacy rather than as a way to shut off intimacy, or a reason to shut off intimacy. I think that is right there, the key to being able to navigate that kind of stuff, and to stay vulnerable when being rejected or experiencing, I don't know, abandonment in a way.
don't you, when you think about your career up to now, don't you just want to cry?
Yeah.
Am I the only one? I mean, seriously, there's so many moments of peaks and valleys. I mean, tears of joy and tears of sadness. It's all webbed in there. But yeah, you're hitting it on the head. If you want to get me right into a serious conversation, sit down with me, look me in the eyes and say, hey, tell me about your art, your music career, and tell me about how you feel about your history. And I will share with you stories that'll make me laugh off my chair, and it'll make me weep in your arms, right? So that's just but maybe that's just particular to who I am. Maybe most people wouldn't be like that. I don't know.
No, I think anybody that's made it a career to be vulnerable
is going to
have that kind of peak in valley, because the acceptance is so joyful and the rejection is just so tender and heartbreaking. I mean, getting rejected on a sale for me at the agency is nothing compared to somebody canceling for the summit. And I don't know why that is, but it has a completely different emotional thing. Yeah, it's just a something. This one is much more this is me, this is my identity, here you go.
I had a friend of mine who brought a painting that he's a painter, and he's an awesome painter, and he donated a painting of his to his parish, and he brought it over and they didn't want it, and he had to literally carry it on his back home his work. He carried it on his back. That's rejection right there. And like that, you know, when you're talking about those people that like kind of cancel, like you're putting in your brushes and you're choosing colors, you're putting in the time, man. You're putting in like burning the oil and choosing where to lay each stroke. And then somebody says, I don't want that. And you have to walk, you know, it's on your back. You can feel the weight. That's hard. It's hard to take.
Yeah. I think that's a great like metaphor for how many artists feel in their relationship with their parishes and their church.
Yes. he literally experienced it physically.
Yeah.
But he speaks for us all, man. He's an amazing artist. I don't want to say his name just because I don't know if he wants me to share that story, but yeah.
It's such a good story though, because it acts almost like an archetype or a metaphor for like what the artist community feels right
totally.
Now. And it's amazing, but it's definitely it's quite the shared wound, you know.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, or we know we'll be accepted if we change something about us. You know, like that's always a kicker too, where it's like I always think like the joke that I say with other musicians is like, oh yeah, yeah, we'd love to have you come play. Can you give a witness?
Yeah.
It's like, can I just play music? No. We want you to talk. And then maybe sprinkle in some music there, you know, in between for bathroom breaks. For them to get their snacks. Okay.
Yeah, that is real. That's very real. But in all of that, like, do you see, I'm sure that you see now, like, almost a little bit like Moses looking into the promised land, like, do you see that changing? It seems like the culture is very much like there's a movement here that there's a shift happening.
Catholic culture?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I see it changing. I think the music's gotten better. I think there are a lot of great people doing things. That's what I love so much about the site, about Catholic Creatives, is that I was just describing it to somebody yesterday, I think, and I was like, it's like, we work in these vacuums, you know, we work in these small little areas and most of us are walking into the environment we just mentioned where there's rejection, there's a weird relationship. We just, as a church currently, the Catholic American Church just doesn't know how to speak to people. It just doesn't know how to speak to people. It's like we have the best thing in the world ever in the sacraments. Yet it's not fun to go to, you know, it's like, yeah. It's not for why, how does that, there's a communication issue. I don't like going to mass. I'm not going to be one of those people and say, I love going to mass because of sacraments. I get it. I know I need it and I do it. The fact that I go is testament to how much I know I need it.
Right? Yeah, seriously, because you're overcoming so
exactly.
much.
Exactly. So, you know, but anyway, but yeah. I don't know what I was saying. I lost sight, but...
No, you're just saying it's good to be able to see.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 So what I love then is like seeing, you know, I would meet these people as I travel. But what I love about the site that you guys do is that I literally see it. I see the work. I've put out offers for things that I need on the site. And I've gotten a response from like everything is like, you guys are amazing. Like this is, it's air. It's oxygen. It's at a time when it's like, when it's stuffy in our little holes, all of a sudden I see all the work that everybody else is doing and it's like opening the windows, like, okay, we're okay. We're okay. And also personally, I am getting to be involved in more things that are of my cloth. Whereas before when I started doing this, I had this whole thing where I was trying to teach people how to create the frame for the picture in the experience. And I would like, and nobody got it. Nobody understood. It was like pulling teeth. It was like teaching an old, you know, I was going to say an old dog. I didn't know what that's teaching an old man, teaching a dog. I don't know. Teaching somebody who has a hard time understanding new things. And now I'm getting asked to be a part of things that I would have done that I would have created myself.
Mm,
so it's good.
That's amazing.
You know,
that's such awesome news, dude.
But when I die,
yeah, people are gonna be like, he was slaving away, so misunderstood before his time.
Yeah, before his time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, joy.
Well, Dude, I'm grateful for you being before the time before and for all of the work that like you and Chris and some of these other guys have done to like pave the way. It's like everything is momentum, right? So like everything that I've done in a way is sort of like been helped by the fact that you like broke the ground. It's sort of like the older kids, like, you know, you guys were born first, so you had to like break in the parents a little bit harder, but like for all the younger ones, like we get an easier job with it. So
dude, you know what though, it was the Holy Spirit and John Paul II is when you started getting John Paul II generations in places of decision making and organization. I just think that started loosening the ground a little bit. And I just want to say, well, thank you for what you just said. That actually means a lot. I don't want to just blow by that. That was awesome. Thank you. I'm reflecting on our conversation. I am not bitter. I'm not mad. I am so content and happy. I'm filled with joy. And I want people to know that because I'm like, all I've been doing is kind of like bitching, but like, no, I'm lamenting. And I'm sharing, I'm vulnerable, but I'm very joyful and I'm very happy and I'm very hopeful. I really am very hopeful for where we're going as a culture of the church. I'm thankful for what you're doing, you and your bro are doing, and all you people that get to go to Iceland. I appreciate that. You should bring me next time. But yeah, I think it's great. Like I love what I'm doing. I have my family. I have my work with Christopher that's ministry heavy. I have my own person, like my solo career or band career. I get to do fun stuff. I get to go fun places. It's really, if you would have told me, 15 years ago that I would be where I am now, I would be shocked. And maybe I would have looked at a second option, but that's a joke. I wouldn't have, I would have been shocked and I would have been really just shocked at how did I even like luck out. So I feel really good.
Yeah, I feel that too. And I also am like, in all of the sort of sharing of the suffering, right? Like there is such a sense of hope that comes from just conversations like this and being able to like know about each other and find each other and really like have solidarity, even when we're sharing our pain, like that is a hopeful experience because the doing of it is a testament to like being understood and to friendship and to brotherhood. So, and pausing right now to sort of be a little bit lower in terms of our energy level because of what's going on in the church. It's like, I think it's both appropriate, but it doesn't mean that we've lost our North Star, which is that just the principle of following this calling that you and I and so many of these other creatives have given our lives to follow is worth it.
Yeah.
You know,
I just interrupted, but yeah. What popped in my head as you're saying along, like, I think what we're doing here or what I feel like I'm doing is acknowledging that to do anything like this is a fight. It is a battle, but it is worth it. And that's the joy. It is a battle, but it is definitely worth every fight of it. So
that's so good, man. And I can't think of a better way to like to tie it up. Like this is like your life, your career, your music career, all the work that you've put in, all the hours, all the road. It is so worth the life that you're getting to live, because it's authentic. It's what you're called to. And I'm grateful that you haven't copped out, got the master's degree and like become an engineer.
that'd be so. Even more shocking. Yeah, you know what it is for me, like if you think, you ever go in those houses where like they weren't planned, like they weren't like it's not like a canned decorating thing where like that picture goes with this carpet, blah, blah, blah. It's eclectic, like their house is like, oh, that's like a weird little like ivory elephant thing, and that's like this cool like African thing, and that's like this weird rug. Where'd you get this? IKEA. Okay, cool. Like there's like all this like eclectic, but it all works. Like the color pattern works, the scheme works, the feel, the vibe. That's how I feel about my life, where I am. It wasn't like a degree I got and then I got the entry level job and I moved up. It was like I kind of stumbled backwards and I've been like rolling down a hill ever since, but I've made a cool snowball and it looks, it's like form-fitting perfectly. So, like, that's where I feel like I'm in that room where it's like, this is an eclectic place to be, and I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, man. Well, do you have any, where can people find you if they want to check out your stuff?
You want my address?
I'm gonna, yeah, dude. they want to see your house.
My address is, you can find me at MikeMangione.com. That's Mangione is M-A-N-G-I-O-N-E. And MikeMangione.com. I'm on Facebook. I just got it back from some man in the Middle East that was trying to take it for the past 2 weeks. So I got my account back. But Facebook, Mike Mangione, Mangione Music, Twitter, all that stuff. Instagram's, I think, my favorite. That's where I get to have some fun. Twitter, I'm still trying to figure out after like 7 years.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
It's a moving target. But cool. Well, guys, you should definitely check out Mike's stuff because it is the real deal. It's super beautiful music, and you've got a relatively new album that people may not have heard if they're already familiar with you. So.
Last October, that record I'm still very, very proud of. So if you like to have music on with the lights low and a good drink in your hand, that's the record.
It is so good, and the film. The film side of it is amazing as well. So I actually like the live performances so much. So anyway, I appreciate the multimedia effort, the high level production, the intimacy. It's all amazing. So everybody should check it out.
Don't wear shorts on stage, folks. That analogy. Don't wear shorts on stage.
Cool. All right, Mike. Have an awesome rest of your day.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate
looking forward to hearing stories from Brazil.
Oh, me too.